This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
WMDX, the John and Gordy Show. Gordy is out today, and Sherry, sorry about that. I know you have a good morning to John, Gordy, and Sam, but in place of Gordy this morning, we have Matthew Rothschild.
Hey, John, how are you this morning?
It's good to have you in here. We got to get your mic on.
Yeah, you're throwing me for a loop. Setting up on different mics today. I forgot about that.
Well, I'm right here, Matt Rothschild.
Matt's from the Progressive and Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and now representing Civic Media.
Yeah, I'm doing a little work for Civic Media, which I'm enjoying. I thought I was going to be retired, but given Trump on the scene, I couldn't exactly totally abandon ship. So I started to do a podcast. Sage Weill wanted me to do a podcast, yeah. The Wisconsin Forward podcast, which I've been enjoying, working with Sam, the engineer here, mm-hmm. producer here. And we just finished yesterday wrapping up a podcast with Earl Ingram, where Earl is really telling his life story and how racism has infected our politics. And it's a really powerful discussion that Earl Ingram provides us with. And that's going to be posted at civicmedia.us in the next couple of days. So that was fun. Angela Lang from Black Leaders Organizing for Communities is also on that podcast. So this was a really fun one to do. And the prior one I did was just my shocked reflections on Trump's victory and how do we possibly move on from it. So that was... Well, that was kind of hard to do.
I assume that was part one. You probably followed that up with part two, three, four, five, six, and seven.
No doubt.
Yeah, it's something else. But I'd like to hear that Earl Ingram thing.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think Luke is going to post it today or tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be great to hear. All right. Well, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to cover today, as usual. I mean, it's like, you know, a fire hose of stuff at this point. Not lies anymore. It's just stuff. And we'll get to that in just a few moments. But first, of course, we've got to do traditionally what we always do at the beginning of the show where my eyes glaze over and I want to pass out in my seat. And that is the National Day Calendar.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the weather first. I don't know what the
weather
is. None of us checked it, so we don't know what to tell people.
Oh, it's just going to be gray in 40s for the next 72 hours.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have my Samsung watch here. And you think, you know, this isn't handy and it doesn't work really well. But it's excellent at telling the weather forecast, also keeping my fitness levels.
You're just scrolling on your watch. You're still yet to find it.
No, it says here.
You're
snow.
Starting to scramble. You still haven't found it yet, have you?
I have found it. Yeah. Snow, okay. Wind, rain, and cold with strong, low,
jeez.
Something or others.
That's not going to be fun tomorrow for all the deer hunters who are going out.
We have 41 degrees currently. Feels like 35. And the high today of 44 degrees. That's it. And then a low tonight around 33. Sounds like...
Thank you. Thank you, weatherman Johnny.
Well, you know, it's a Samsung weather forecast for you today.
And it's late November, Wisconsin. What are you going to do?
It's
gray here unless it's 10 below zero. Then we get to see the sun.
That's right. All right, let's get to the first thing on the national calendar. It's not a big deal. No, I'm not going to make anything up. But here it is.
Okay.
Substitute Educators Day. All right. It's going to be that and National Cranberry Relish Day. So let's get into the Substitute Educators Day.
We've only got two things on the list?
Yeah, that's it. Unless I'm missing something.
No, but that's good for you because you hate doing this, don't you?
Yes. If I'm missing something, I'm happy with that.
And why wouldn't that just be Substitute Teachers Day as opposed to Educators Day?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That's what we call them.
Might as well use the, I don't know why they put that on instead of the term we always use.
Well, anyway, American Education Week wraps up recognition of teachers and administrators by recognizing Substitute Educators Day. The event occurs the Friday before Thanksgiving each year and highlights the important role of substitute teachers and what they do in the classroom each and every day of our lives.
I got to think it's a hard job. I wouldn't want it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I talked to a substitute teacher the other day because we had a story about teachers leaving the profession because of the difficulty teaching the, I think it's Gen Alpha, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they're basically the frustrated with, you know, and they're death scrolling constantly and doom scrolling. And what they want to do is they want to get their attention and they can't. And a lot of these teachers are just, you know, bugging out of the industry. That's it.
Well, it's been hard here in Wisconsin since Act 10 and Walker when he went after teachers and
vilified them.
Totally vilified. I remember being at watching TV when the recall election was results were coming in and Walker won again. It was another horrible night for watching election returns.
Exactly.
And this poor woman was being interviewed at the Concourse Hotel here in Madison. She was a teacher, and she had tears in her eyes. She said, I don't know why teachers why people hate teachers so much. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so between the attack on teachers that Walker started, the attack on their unions, the demand that they teach to the test all the time, and then the distractedness of their students. I mean, it's just got to be an impossible task. Number one, to be a regular teacher and then to be a substitute teacher. That just seems impossible.
Yeah, right. I'm picking up where somebody else left off, getting in the studio.
Yeah, just coming in cold.
Yeah, you don't know what to say to these kids, you know, what they're studying necessarily. But they have a pretty good plan, a daily planner. I know those teachers have all this stuff out there online. And that's how I kept up to date with my kids in school. It was really cool, though, being able to see what they do in school, what they're missing in school, how long they've been missing these things in school, and the alternatives for making up all these things in school.
You just like to get on their case, don't you?
No, well, my younger one was more of a problem. He had attention deficit. I gave him all my attention deficit genetically. So, one of the most heartwarming and funniest scenes I remember was we had a conference with the teachers that my kid had, and all of them showed up. All the teachers were in the room around this table, and my kid was there with us sitting next to him, and we're trying to take questions from each one of them. I mean, he had problems in every class.
Ooh, you were outnumbered.
Yeah, I was. But the impressive thing was each teacher seemed to be extremely sincere about their quest to get through to Brett, my son.
You know, the teachers here in Madison, teachers across Wisconsin do a tremendous job. My wife was a school nurse for many years here in the Madison area, and she was always so impressed with the teachers in what they did day in and day out.
Yeah. You know, I have a little story about that. This is my mimeograph story.
Oh. Oh, boy.
And, you know, a school nurse. And the school nurse put me in a room because I had a headache or something. I had to lay down. I felt nauseous or something like that. And she left me in the room. And in the wastebasket were mimeographs of ink. And, you know, the purple ink, that wonderful smell.
The stuff that smelled like, I've never smelt it, so I don't know what it smells like. But
I can't really describe it. It was just so good.
It's like a sweet and intoxicating odor.
Yeah, the intoxicating odor. But instead of just smelling it, I licked the sheet clean of this ink, whatever the hell was in it.
Didn't the nurse freak out?
Yeah, they did freak out. Yeah, yeah. You know, she brought in the school of principal.
They had to call poison control or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they reported it because, you know, it's so devastating.
You didn't get your stomach pumped or anything?
She didn't want to take responsibility for it.
Right. I probably should have had my stomach pumped, but I wonder what my face looked like. Though. That's the other thing. I don't remember that at all.
Your tongue must have been disgusting.
Oh, God. But it was good. You know, it actually tasted well.
Don't try that at home.
No, do not try that one at home. Well, thank gosh we don't have mimeographs anymore. Although, Sam, you have a mimeograph machine, right?
It's not the same kind that has, like, that sweet-smelling ink, but yes, I do. I'm working on starting like an underground newsletter, if you will, whenever the country goes to hell.
I still say Xerox this or Xerox that, that which shows how updated I am.
So. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, another season of National Cranberry Relish Day, okay? I mean, here we are, cranberry relish. You know, I like the sauce. I don't care about relish.
What's the difference exactly?
You know, we're the biggest cranberry producer in the country here in Wisconsin.
We are.
Yeah, number one.
We stole it from
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like you. I like it out of a can. My wife made a turkey dinner last weekend. We usually have a pre-turkey dinner before we go to my in-laws to have turkey dinner. She just makes the best turkey and the best gravy and the best dressing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's old-fashioned dressing. I know you're not supposed to put it in the turkey and do it that way like we used to do. We still do it that way. It tastes so much better, yeah. And then I like the Ocean Spray cranberry out of a can. I hate to say it, but
same
that's
here.
What I love. Yeah. I know we get fancy cranberry when we go down to my in-laws, but
they make it themselves, right?
Yeah, but I still like it out of the can.
Yeah, any kind of spice to it just doesn't work for me. But I like it when, you know, it has the berries in it, right? I mean, you got the solid berries and you just mix it around. You have to do that because the berries settle to the bottom of the cans.
And, you know, I love cranberry on my turkey sandwich the next day, too.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'll have turkey and mayonnaise and cranberry and lettuce. And just we were eating turkey for like 5 days.
Well, that doesn't matter. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, you always talk about, like, mixing different kinds of cereals together.
Yes.
But you've never done that with, like, Thanksgiving food?
I know. I have. Well, you know, in the plate, it usually gets mixed up just a little bit. But I never thought of putting cranberries on a turkey
sandwich.
I also put a little dressing on it if it's left over. So that really piles it out.
Oh,
you
know. No, the dressing,
wonderful. Cranberry, lettuce.
God, you're making
mayonnaise.
Me hungry.
I know.
There you
know.
Go.
That's it. Now I can't wait for dinner. All right. Well, you know, I got to go to a Christmas celebration this weekend because
Christmas already?
Yeah, my sister has the ability to fly in from Long Island at a lower rate if she just takes the plane a little bit earlier than normal seasonal rate. So we're going to get together this weekend in Illinois, Crystal Lake, and then I'll be coming back up here and doing the old show again.
How's that going to work for you? You don't really like getting together with your extended. You said your sister. I guess she's not really extended family. But
you're putting them on the spot here.
My sister, she's a dominating individual. she was one of those women's libbers, and and that was great because I also am very much for women's liberation. But she tells me what to do now. You know, she orders me around the house, and that's what I don't like, big sisters.
But she was a pioneer in one of those early feminists.
Oh, yeah. She was one of the leaders.
Oh, that's great.
We're going to take a break here. We'll be back with the story about Marco Rubio and how he has changed.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
.7 WMDX, John and Gordy Show. A special guest this morning, Matt Rothschild, and Gordy is out right now. He's got other things to do. Busy guy, busy life, and we haven't forgotten about this day in history and some of the birthdays that are going on. So, what do you got for us today?
Well,
you got to open up the book, right?
I can open up the book for you.
All right, let's go.
Oh, God.
I don't want, dusty. I don't want to be in the same room with you.
Yeah. Well, you're not. It's a good thing that you're not. God.
Yeah.
It's like somebody... I keep telling you, somebody must be like sprinkling asbestos on this book. It's so dusty.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It looks like asbestos. So. Not to scare you or anything.
Let's see. What do we got? Well, the big thing today, you guys have been talking about it all morning. Long before I was born, long before my parents were even born, today in 1963 was the day that JFK was assassinated.
Yeah, Sam. 61 years after the assassination of JFK. I remember it. I was 5 years old at the time. It was the funeral for JFK was the only time or the first time I ever saw my father cry, which is, you know, when John was saluting as the casket went by. It was too much. But yeah, I mean, it was...
The buildup around that family was something, wasn't it?
It was just a huge event. I mean, my father used to kind of make fun of JFK. I mean, my dad was a Democrat, but, he thought JFK was a playboy. And then there was a funny guy who put out spoof records on the Kennedys.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
He would listen to that and laugh all the time about, you know, like the Kennedys are pretending they're busy on Saturday night, but they actually have no one coming over to the White House and they're feeling all alone.
Yep.
That was one of the gags. But anyway, yeah, Kennedy, I think we have a little clip from his inaugural address just to give people a sample here.
All right, let's listen to it.
Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike, that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
There's JFK in his inaugural address at the height of the Cold War.
Yeah, yeah. Quite a difference, kind of contrast with Trump's speeches.
Yeah, I mean, and remember he talked about human rights there. I don't think we'll hear Trump talking about human rights in his inaugural address coming up.
Not anytime soon.
Nor will the torch be passed to a new generation. Kamala Harris was using that phrase.
Yes.
It's time for the torch to be passed. But no, there's no torch being passed here. Torch being passed backwards. And maybe her slogan, we're not going back, we won't go back, didn't work out so well because some people evidently wanted to go back.
They did, yes. I think the comedian at that time who did impressions, Vaughn Meader.
Oh, yes. So you were alive when Kennedy was assassinated. Yeah. What's your memory?
I remember that I was in junior high or middle school, as they call it now, and the teachers, it was like between classes, and people were pouring out of the classrooms, and the teachers were crying and freaking out and holding on to each other. And I started tearing up myself because, you know, I bought into the framing of the Kennedy family. You know, it was just an amazing moment where you saw all of this end instantly. I mean, it was a really hard lesson for me as a child and every other kid in that class. And the teachers, seeing teachers break down was a moment that, you know, I didn't think was possible, right?
Yeah, it was a shattering moment for our history. And looking back at the Kennedy term, two things stick out to me. One is the Bay of Pigs, which was a CIA attempt to overthrow Castro, which ended in a disaster. And JFK came out with a great line that victory has 1,000 fathers and defeat is an orphan, which and he took responsibility for it. And the thing that he did best was not blowing up the world.
Right.
Because during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1963, the generals wanted to go to war, full-out nuclear war.
Yep.
And he and Bobby Kennedy, RFK's dad, RFK Jr.'s dad, cut from a different cloth, told the military to sit down and shut up. And we're not going to attack. We're not going to blow up Cuba, which would have ended up with the U.S. and Russia bombing each other.
That kind of set a precedent at that time as well, because then, you know, we believed in the commander in chief in making that decision instead of leaving it up to the military generals.
Yeah, and in that inaugural address, Kennedy talks about how dangerous these weapons of these nuclear weapons of global destruction are, and that is a reminder that, you know, even still today, you know, we've got thousands, Russia's got thousands, China's got hundreds. Pakistan and India have got some. North Korea's got some. Israel's got some. I mean, we haven't done what we were supposed to do to make the world safer.
Well, the idea of mutual destruction is still out there. And for some reason, we don't play that up as much, right? I mean, now we're hearing saber rattling again from Russia about having the nuclear weapons. And if we do this with Ukraine, then they're going to think about using nuclear weapons. I just don't buy it, you know?
Well, I think I'm critical of the Biden administration for giving Ukraine these long-range missiles. Oh. I think it's needlessly provocative. Ukraine's going to have to come to the table real soon anyway. Why try to hustle a little game of chicken with Putin at this point? That seems foolhardy to me.
Yeah, well, we got to give them some edge. We hope that they can win this war.
They're never going to be able to win the war. Ukraine was never going to be able to beat Russia. If they started to beat Russia, Russia would drop a nuclear weapon on Kyiv.
All right. Well, we've got Idiocracy coming up in just a few moments, and we'll get to that Marco Rubio story.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point, a dumbing down. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
What an idiot! Oh, what a loser!
Now listen, Grapehead. I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Idiocracy.
For the smartest guy in the world, you're pretty dumb sometimes.
This is the sequel, of course.
We're living it.
The Trump administration. Oh, man. You know, I had a debate with my older son yesterday about Idiocracy. I brought it up in conversation about the show and a story that was in Idiocracy. And he goes, you know, John, Idiocracy is actually a movie about eugenics. You know, I'm thinking, no, don't go there. Don't do this to me. You know, it's a feature on the damn show, right? But he's kind of right in a way, but at the same time, the only defense I could come up with is that it's a parody, okay?
We're living in real terms here.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, I have these kind of weird, interesting discussions with my sons. I'm constantly debating and reinforcing my point with them and you know, they're challenging me every second of the day.
You know, my sons were on to Trump's appeal long before I was. They didn't vote for Trump, but
yeah.
I remember the first time Trump was running when he was debating all the other Republican candidates, including Scott Walker. And at the end of the debate, they said, Trump's going to be the next president. And I said, you're out of your mind. But they said, look, he's going to win. And they were right, because they saw him as someone who wasn't a politician as usual. Mm-hmm. They and their friends don't like politicians as usual. Most Americans don't like politicians as usual.
Right.
And they saw him as entertaining. And they knew that, you know, as people who grew up in this technological era and media era, that's what people want. They want someone entertaining. And so, yeah, they called it long before I did. I never thought he was going to win.
Wow, the TV generation knows best.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but I always emphasize with my kids that, you know, just throwing out the baby with the bathwater is not the way to move ahead, you know, to progress at all, just because you think that he's entertaining. And I heard that as well from their friends. It's not the reason that you want to start over or throw out what's in place currently. And I got criticism for that as well from my sons, you know, because, yeah, but, oh, you're a liberal. Right. You're a capitalist.
But even, you know, this time around, I mean, maybe a mistake that Kamala Harris made, and I thought she ran a great campaign and with a few exceptions and just worked her tail off for it. So I don't want to quibble, but I'm thinking back on strategy. I mean, maybe, you know, and again, one of my sons brought this to my attention. The Liz Cheney thing is wrong. The Dick Cheney thing is really wrong. And you're going to have Kamala Harris as the candidate of the establishment versus Donald Trump, who loves running as the anti-establishment candidate.
Well, that's a great point. That's an excellent point. Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to be sitting next to Republicans like Liz Cheney.
And also it was a slap in the face to the progressive base, which never liked Liz Cheney and absolutely hates Dick Cheney and think, as I do, that he's a war criminal.
But at the very same time, oh, I do too, you know, the Darth Vader of politics. But the thing is, all they wanted, they held true to their point of view, but they wanted to save democracy.
Well, this is why I was applauding at the time. I mean, I was totally on board with the Liz Cheney thing, but I was being warned by my oldest son that this is a big mistake. And other people like Francesca Hong, who was our representative here in the State Assembly, was on Civic Media with me one day after the election and said it was an unforced error.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that Harris and Walz both had a fantastic message and a fantastic campaign. And what we've been saying on this the show, basically, for a long period of time, for me anyway, is that I think that if you run a four-year campaign with rallies, identifying your opponent and people remembering that identification, you can't change the result of what happened in this election. People recognize that they were the establishment and they were siding with Republicans and they were, turning their backs on the progressive movement itself and all of that stuff. I think in a way it's tough to run against somebody for 3 months who has been running for 4 years and had campaign rallies for those 4 years.
And running for 9 years,
if you want to go back further. He never took a break.
Right. And he was just running on his, you know, he's a con man and a marketer. And he was just, keeping Make America Great Again, greatest economy ever. I'll bring it back to you.
So, always. Yeah.
And so he was on topic constantly, and she was inherited an impossible situation with an impossibly short time frame.
Came very close with a 3-month campaign, so I think they did a really good job. I think with Harris, and this is the problem I see right now, Harris dropping out now, completely just disappearing off the face of the earth, I think that's a mistake.
Democrats, I totally agree with you, and I hadn't thought about that before. You're absolutely right.
Democrats do this. Every time the end of an election, they lose it, they disappear. I think with the momentum that she has garnered, I think she should stay out there, be the voice of this
generation.
Yeah,
I want to hear from her. I want her to stand up, be proud, and carry the banner.
Yep, and I think she should run for 4 years, just like Trump did, and have rallies and get out there and be the front runner. Right now, in a poll recently, I guess yesterday we read about that, she is the front runner at this point. So I think if she maintains that goal to run again in 2028, I think she's got it. And if you run constantly and portray and identify her opponent and people remember that identification, she can win that election because there's going to be an awful lot for her to talk about.
Yeah, and let's have an open primary and see if she can win the primary. And if she does, she'll be a much better candidate for it.
Right. We'll have that open primary, but I think, with her running for 4 years, I think she's going to win that easily.
But then you'll get to the tough question, which Earl Ingram was talking about, which is, racism and sexism, and are we going to be able to clear those two hurdles at once?
Well, do you think that maybe this time around, because she lost, and a lot of people are basing that loss on racism because of her color and the fact that she's a woman, that may be a moot point at this juncture? Because, you know, if she runs again, you know, we've already talked about that. We've already lived through it. We've already, you know, thought about it. Maybe now we can get over that hurdle.
I hope so. I just remember a very smart man in Madison, no longer living here. He's in Florida now, but he worked for Paul Wellstone, a lawyer and a political activist. Mm-hmm. And he told me 6 weeks before the election, in a country as racist and sexist as we are, the Democrats really are putting up a black woman now and think they're going to beat Trump with that. And it took my breath away, really, because, you know, I was hopeful. I mean, I posted something at Civic Media, 10 reasons why Kamala Harris is going to win. Shows what I know.
Well, I felt the exact same way. there's a certain idealism that we have. I think it's our generation, essentially, but there is idealism.
Yeah, and we want the country. We want that to be our country.
Yeah.
We don't want to recognize a country as being so stuck in the past that it won't move forward. And we did move forward with Barack Obama, but then we've been facing this horrible backlash.
All right, let's get to a Trump history lesson here, and we're going to talk about Marco Rubio. Trump, way back when, and you know that Trump now wants to put Marco Rubio in as Secretary of State, right? This is what he said in, November 9th, 2015. All right, he said this: Marco Rubio is a total lightweight who I wouldn't hire to run one of my smaller companies. A highly overrated politician. All right, that's what he said. All right, so a year later, now this is just a year later, for our future Secretary of State, this is another comment. This is Cut 83. Listen to this.
The stakes are giving control of the party of Lincoln and Reagan, of the conservative movement, and ultimately of the United States over to a con artist. That will not happen. I make this promise to you today.
Yeah.
I will do whatever it takes. I will campaign as long as it takes. I will stay in this race as long as it takes.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, a con artist, will never get control of this party.
He was a real prophet there.
Yeah. Great decision making.
Here's another quote I found from Rubio.
Wait.
For you. I know some of your friends have bought into this. Listen, friends, don't let friends vote for con artists.
There you go.
It is time to open our eyes. It is time to open our eyes. We cannot allow a con artist to get access to the nuclear codes of the United States of America. It's a big fraud, and it's time to open our eyes, and we will in the days and weeks to come. I'm confident of it.
You know, just goes on and on, right?
I mean, this is the shocking thing. It's still kind of shocking that just, you know, people who knew who Donald Trump was said it out loud and then just rolled over for him.
Absolutely.
Whether it's Rubio or Ted Cruz or Lindsey Graham, you choose. I mean, they all know who this guy is, and now they're all kissing the ring and saluting him.
It's absolutely crazy. We got another cut from Marco Rubio, and this is during the presidential debate, I believe. Let's listen.
This is what we're going to have.
Here's the guy that inherited $200 million. If he hadn't inherited $200 million, you know where Donald Trump would be right now?
No,
watches in Manhattan.
I'm wrong.
There it is. Unbelievable stuff, you know. And now, of course, you know, the trust is there, the ass kissing is there, and now he's possibly going to be the Secretary of State.
No, he's going to sail through.
Yeah,
he's going to be one of the easiest nominations to get approved by the Senate, and yeah, he'll be our new Secretary of State. He's a little more, much more hawkish on Russia than Trump is. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's true. And you brought this up just a moment ago about Trump taking credit for a lot of the economy that President Obama put in place.
Yeah, the economy at a macro level is doing very well now. And so Trump is likely to be able to have a little smooth sailing. I mean, interest rates are going down. Gas prices are down. And, you know, unemployment is still really low.
That's
so it looks like Trump is going to be able to benefit from the tailwind of Biden's economic policies. But I am reminded about something that Van Jones said, which was whoever invented the expression Bidenomics should go sit in the corner because it was so it was such a tagline for Trump during the election season. He had a commercial with Kamala Harris using the term Bidenomics. Mm-hmm. And then because so many Americans have suffered because of inflation, with their real wages going down because of inflation, that her extolling Bidenomics was kind of the kiss of death. And that was one of the problems. You know, she had a hard time separating from Joe Biden, even though at a macro level, he's handled the economy better than any leader of any other advanced industrial country in the world.
Right. The Economist came out with an article, and they said, the U.S. is the envy of the world, but in the right-wing media, the horror stories were relentless, and mainstream economic reporting too often followed that lead. Allow me to make the world's easiest prediction. After 12 noon, next January 20th, it won't take Fox News and Fox Business even a full hour to start locating every positive economic indicator they can find and start touting those. Within weeks, the roaring Trump economy will be conventional wisdom.
Well, and that speaks to another part of the problem that Kamala Harris was, which is we're living in two different, entirely different media universes. So the people who are hooked up to Fox News and hooked up to Sean Hannity and Vicky McKenna on 24/7 IV drip, you know, they saw a different world than the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a little frustrating because I know with all the Bidenomics that took place, Trump is going to just sail. He won't really have to do much if he didn't want to, but what they're going to do, of course, is tear apart the government as it exists today, and that is Project 2025.
Right. And we'll see about his tariffs. I mean, if he goes through with the tariffs, he's going to create some inflation, which is going to hurt a lot of people. If he starts really taking 11 million, 12 million undocumented people out of this country, he's going to destroy the dairy industry. He's going to destroy the roofing industry.
Speaking of that, we've got that story coming up in just a few moments. It's an attack on Wisconsin farmers.
Yeah.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
.7 WMDX, the John and Gordy in the Morning Show with Sam and our guest this morning. Gordy is out. We have Matt Rothschild in, filling in and doing a wonderful job. It's great working with you. I'm going to listen to you for many, many years on the radio.
Well, John, it's my pleasure. I always like doing radio.
Yeah,
it's fun coming on your show.
I know. It's great stuff, isn't it? It's a great way to retire.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. It's not like you're pushing wheelbarrows around of cement or anything like that.
Plus, I'm not begging people for money all day long, which I had to do when I was running nonprofits.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, that's a big thing. All right, let's get to the promise story, and that is Wisconsin farmers are under attack. Wisconsin farmers are known for being an outspoken advocate. So let's, for the dairy industry in this state. And we have one guy, Hans Breitenmoser. Are you familiar with him?
I know Hans. He was he's a big dairy farmer in Merrill or around the Merrill area.
Yeah.
He also, interestingly enough, was very active in the Fair Maps movement.
Oh.
Yeah. He was on the county board there and helped initiate a resolution saying we want Fair Maps in Wisconsin. It passed. And then he went to the Counties Association of Wisconsin and got the Counties Association to get on board for Fair Maps. So he was a visionary in that movement as well.
Wow, that is excellent. I love it. He said the election outcome is an unmitigated disaster for the state's agriculture-related businesses. Trump criticized immigration policies that overall target essential farm workers, many of whom come from outside the U.S., and our dairy and meat industries rely heavily on these workers, and sending them home or restricting immigration threatens to collapse Wisconsin's agricultural economy. Tariffs often result in retaliatory measures against ag products, and people have been misled, and now they're about to find out just how much.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to see images of the U.S. military barging into pork processing plants or big dairy plants in Wisconsin and dragging out employees one at a time or 10 at a time? Really, is that the America we're going to be living in? That's what Trump has promised.
Yeah, it's easy to find. I mean, you know, the dairy industries, you know, the farms are out there. They have the labor. They have units where the labor lives. They can certainly find all of those places very easily. And even if they have visas, according to at least what they have threatened to do, is take even the people who have visas in this country, all immigrants, out of this country if they're not a citizen. And of course, you know, Stephen Miller wants to at least repeal citizenship? What is it?
Birthright citizenship. Denaturalization.
He wants to get rid of. No, denaturalization. Yeah. He wants to take away, even if they're naturalized, he wants to take them out.
Yeah. There's nothing that wouldn't surprise me. Right now with the Trump administration, especially on this policy of immigration, he ran on this. You know, one thing that worries me is there's a kind of a bloodlust out there among the far right. They really want to see people getting beat up and thrown out and you're savaged.
Yeah.
And so, and Trump plays to that. And when his crowds, you know, applaud more, the more violent his rhetoric gets, you know, the more he gets off on it. And so this kind of sadism really concerns me, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've had an opportunity for decades after decades after decades to change the immigration laws so at least dairy farmers in the state could have year-round help. It's weird how that is, right? I mean, the crops, which is a seasonal thing, they have year-round help, but the dairy industry does not have year-round help. And that is such an odd thing, and we have not been able to change it for all of these decades.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a dairy farmer like Hans Breitenmoser, I mean, and there are a lot of dairy farmers here in Wisconsin, you got to know that this is going to be a nightmare for you.
Yeah.
And if you're running other business, I mean, a lot of businesses in this country, we all know this, they rely on undocumented workers. And what's going to happen to those industries? Who's going to work in those companies? Who's going to, you know, be the farm worker? Who's going to be the roofer? Who's going to milk the cows?
That's right. Who's going to process the cheese? Who's going to cut it up into blocks? And so we can buy them in the store. Who's going to be able to do that, Sam?
Oh, well, I'm glad that you asked. I have that on my resume.
Yes.
I used to work at a cheese factory, Matt.
Oh, where was that, Sam?
Marathon, Wisconsin.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Is that where you grew up?
Nearby there, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, neat. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
He was also a mattress at one time.
I don't want to tell that story again.
He's got quite the resume for, you know, 23 years old. Yeah. Well, anyway, he wants to get into history, right? History or math?
I thought that you were going to talk about that at the start of the show today for
Substitute Educator Day.
I thought you were going to try and discourage me from becoming a teacher again.
Well, we almost did discourage you, didn't we? No. With teachers dropping out of the industry because of kids
said to Tim Slecker a few days ago,
yeah.
The election disheartened me, but it didn't discourage me.
Oh, keep going. Be a teacher.
See? Yeah.
It's a great career. A
little idealism there, huh?
Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't go back on that. Seriously, I think you can make more money doing that than being a producer for a radio show, okay? Just a tip.
Good to know.
From the old radio guy.
Good to know, huh? Oh, you know, we've run completely out of time here. I wanted to get to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They have had a couple of cases anyway, at least the elections official, Megan Wolf, they had discussions with that, and I have a few clips on that. I thought it was interesting, their point of view on this, and also the abortion law. So I just wanted to bring those out. We might get to them next hour. Right now, we're going to take a little break here. Our guest, Matt Rothschild, is with us. Gordy is out for today, and we've got more stories coming up. So stay tuned.
Come on, come on, come on.
As we were saying,
is the John.
Gordy Show.
John Gordy in the morning.
As we were saying,
let the sun shine.
It's the John Gordy Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.